Yep. All right. Sounds good. So today our interview guest is Julie Geske-Peer. Julie is the founder and president of Peer Performance Solutions, a company focused on enhancing individual and organizational performance. She's an expert in facilitating leadership and relationship skills. Julie is also the author of Five Senses for Success, Strategies to Thrive in Any Arena, which was recently named an award-winning finalist in the International Book Awards. So Julie, if you could please share more about yourself and your career, and maybe give us some more information about book awards, that would be fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me here today, Caleb, and everyone. So my career has been kind of a winding one, I would say. So when you think about career, it wasn't a straight and concrete path. I didn't have a specific aim when I started out. It was very winding. Most recently, I'm running Peer Performance Solutions, which I started full-time back in 2014, and I had done some prior work on the side of my full-time gigs even before I went into it full-time. So I was working with clients on the side of my full-time employment. Prior to that, I worked at the University of Minnesota Foundation, leading the team that provided operational support to the major gift fundraising efforts around the university. And prior to that, I worked in a number of research and consulting firms, working with lots of different clients across the globe, from multinational clients to smaller manufacturing type clients, or, you know, just quite a wide gamut of clients. I love the consulting world, which is why I wanted to create my own business and move into it. I love that fast-paced problem solving, trying to figure out how to help people improve or fix issues that they may be challenged by. So I was hired in my last two full-time jobs to repair team situations that were occurring with clients that weren't happy, or colleague situations and the team members themselves not fully engaged. So I love doing that. And that's really what I love doing in Peer Performance Solutions, helping lift performance through a variety of things. You mentioned leadership, relationship, and also accountability strategies I like to work with. So that's my career, but it really didn't start as easy as that sounded. When I was very young, I had what I would call a slow start, or stunted start, if you will. I came out of a dysfunctional family, and I didn't go to college right away after high school. In fact, I quit high school the middle of my first senior year, which is just crazy, right? And then I went back and did graduate, and then moved into some admin type of work that I was doing, and found myself into the research world through that avenue, doing some work. And then I was so intrigued by that world of how do we use data, collect data and use data to inform decisions and strategies and things like that, that I just ended up kind of evolving into that as working in those consulting firms and helping organizations to understand client experience, employee experience, things like that. So it was just kind of a winding path. I did go back and get my BA, go back to school, got a BA in communications and an MA in organizational leadership later. And I've had a number of trainings and certifications throughout my career as well. I'm an executive coach and emotional intelligence coach. And I'm also a qualified neutral for the state of Minnesota, which is a mediator, but they call it a qualified neutral, which also takes certification. And I've done a variety of other trainings because I'm kind of a lifelong learner person. So that's a bit of an overview of my career.
Yeah, that's... Wow, that's very interesting. It sounds like you've come from, I guess, an interesting past, as well as going down various avenues in your career. So you mentioned that you had a slow start initially. in high school, were academics natural to you?
I was really a good student, and I could kind of do school without really doing much, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I don't know. I was lucky. I was blessed. I was making some really poor choices. I wasn't always at school. I was doing some things that got in the way of, I could have done better. I could have had a much more traditional path if I had even known about how to go about doing that. Coming from the family I did, that wasn't something that was being discussed at the time, or, you know, these are options that are available to me. I didn't really understand fully what that was like. So I just kind of coasted through a little bit, but it was easy. Well, most subjects. I am not an advanced math person by any stretch of the imagination.
Not many people
are. I love Excel because it can do my math for me. So,
okay.
Yeah, I was lucky, very blessed that I could do most subjects pretty well.
Perhaps some of your experiences may have taught you something, though, that you could have leveraged later on, like experiential learning, like life learning. So maybe it wasn't all bad. Harley has a question. Go ahead.
Hey, Julie. I think it's fascinating. And I was listening to the podcast you're on. It's called My Opinion. And it was great learning there. And you mentioned the dysfunctional family in that as well. I think it's interesting. How do you feel like that background has helped you be successful in your career? Like, I know there are a lot of individuals in the world that don't have perfect families, don't have perfect backgrounds. How do you feel like it's helped you in your career?
Yeah, I feel like it has given me strength and fortitude, I guess, of kind of that survival nature, if you will, that really is about overcoming things. Thank you for mentioning that podcast. I enjoyed that. And I'm glad to be here with you as well, Harley. So I'm a believer that everything that I have experienced in my life, difficult or easy, but especially the difficult things, are the things that make me who I am today. So I don't begrudge some of those really tough lessons that I've had in life. Certainly, I have had to heal over time before I got to that place. But I feel that has made me who I am. And I share that openly because when doing podcasts and things, because I agree with what you said, that many people don't come from idyllic backgrounds. And I like to show that people can come from challenging backgrounds and still go wherever they want to go, build the kind of success they want to build. So I've taken a winding path toward where I am, and I feel good, but I'm still striving for additional things. So I do believe those hard lessons are character building, if you will.
That's awesome.
I have a question about your, I guess a quick question about your career path, Julie. I also find consulting very interesting. I was a consultant for a time. But now I've moved back into the private industry, but I also do some consulting on the side. What gravitated you towards consulting, and specifically like leadership consulting?
Well, those are probably two questions for me. So I'll talk about consulting and then I'll talk about leadership. So consulting, I got into that through the research avenue initially. And what I loved about it is having these high demand clients needing really powerful elements that we could deliver. And I love that feel of needing to provide something of great value to make your contract worth it, right? Whatever your contract is. And I love the variety of it, working with all types of organizations across many industries. I like the fast pace. I thrive in the kind of deadline. I'm a very deadline driven person. If I don't have a lot going on, I kind of find myself just doing whatever, not so driven. But when I have lots of deadlines, I keep moving quickly, and that helps me. In terms of leadership, when I moved into my master's degree program in organizational leadership, I realized how much I love leadership and really doing leadership in what I hope is a good manner, right? I really wanted to, I had a passion around doing leadership well. I think there are a lot of bad leaders out there. I'll just be And I wanted to go out and do it differently. I mean, there are a lot of good leaders too, and I wanted to model after those that are stellar leaders and learn from them. Those that are the kinds of people that are talked about in grad programs, but also those I'd observe in the organizations where I worked or the clients with whom I worked. And I just really found a passion for leadership. And so I ended up blending the two together.
Interesting. And Harley has a question for you.
Yes. This is regarding your master's in leadership. And I thought it was interesting when I was learning about you. You know, there are a lot of people that gravitate towards business. They may, the typical path is to go to the MBA route and get their MBA. And it's something that I've looked into with a master's of leadership because I strive to be a good leader, just like you said. What caused you to go the MA route of leadership versus the MBA route?
A couple things. So I did do a big assessment of MBA programs versus this Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership, MAOL, I call it, or it's often called. And so I really thought about those two avenues back when I was doing my grad program. I finished it in 2002, so it's been a while. And at that time, I felt the most of the MBA programs that would work for my needs in terms of scheduling and things like that, and not having to go away from here because I had family and things, they didn't have as much of the relational leadership elements that I felt were important. The ability to lead, to inspire versus to, I'll say, use a hammer, so to speak, to get things done, to be rigid. I don't want to go that path. I wanted to go the path of relational, inspiring, being really ethical. Ethical was very important to me. And so the program I ended up selecting was actually at the same school where I got my BA, which was the College of St. Catherine at the time. It is now St. Catherine University. And I also appreciated their format, which was an every other weekend kind of format that worked really well with my family situation. So there were a few things going into that, but really for the MA versus MBA, it was that I wanted that more relational and ethical and inspiring kind of those elements that I wasn't seeing in the MBA programs at that time. I think it's shifted now, though. I think many of those MBA programs do have some of those elements.
Yep.
Yeah, they're fairly common now. The MBA has probably evolved quite a bit over the last decade or two. I guess I'd like to take this moment to maybe transition into your book, 5 Senses for Success, Strategies to Thrive in Any Arena. I actually read this book a couple months ago and I loved it. It was actually a very quick read. If anyone's, you know, interested in like a quick, very value add read about leadership, and I guess some advice on career success and how to, I guess, engage with others and be a better leader. I guess overall, the purpose of this book is to help the reader achieve their personal and professional goals. For me personally, I found your book to be unlike most leadership books. There were elements of humility as you shared moments that allowed for scrutiny by the reader. This allowed me to connect with the book in ways that were, I guess, otherwise difficult with similar leadership reads that I've picked up, and I've picked up quite a few, and some of them I've had to put down early, I will admit. but yours, I really felt a connection and felt really engaged. I guess after reading the book, it was obvious that it took years of personal and professional experience for you to write it. You reflect on key moments and even times of adversity that you faced during your childhood and career that molded you into the person you are. The life experiences, I guess, that you accrued ultimately resulted in a success playbook that you wrote out and thought about in depth. Could you, I guess, share more about what inspired you to write this book and give a brief overview after that of the five senses or vice versa, whatever you think makes more sense.
Okay, great. So I'll talk a little bit about my journey to writing the book, and then I'll talk about the senses. So I've always been an aspiring author. From the time I was a teenager, I was writing, started with poetry and things like that. And then when I moved into adulthood, I was always writing on the side, different types of fiction things, thinking I would write fiction books someday. But I was meanwhile working and things like that, having family and whatnot. But then once I started my business, and when I started my business, I thought, oh, now I'll have time to write. Well, that was crazy. But when I started my business, it was also at a time period where I started reflecting on where I wanted to head with that writing journey. And I was thinking simultaneously about impact that I want to make in life and legacy I want to leave and things like that, as I'm a more senior person in my career now. And I decided I wanted to move into the nonfiction realm. So I put aside all those many fiction works that are still sitting in files. And I moved into the nonfiction idea. I had a general sense of what I wanted to write about, but I didn't have the framework initially. And it took me numerous years, starting back in, I think it was 2015, and it published last year in 2021. So I would write and then set it aside, write and then set it aside. And what was happening is I was having this confidence issue. Like I was getting a little concerned about putting my thoughts, and you, as you mentioned, there are some very personal stories in there. And I felt that was important to do to help illuminate what I was trying to share, but it was also difficult for me. And I was just trying to overcome that lack of confidence around this whole thing. So eventually got there and got it published last year. So the concept of the five senses for success is that I took the initial original five senses that most of us realize. I realize not everybody has the capability to experience all senses, but the five senses of see, hear, touch, taste, and smell. And I twisted them or altered them or heightened them, elevated them into what I call the five senses for success. So I use that framework. And my five senses for success are observe, listen, feel, engage, and appreciate. Now, the framework, I'd been writing about these ideas, but I hadn't really come up with the concrete framework until pretty far into my years of writing. And I'm a very spiritual person. It just kind of came to me I felt like overnight because I woke up with it. But then as I was working with that framework, it really was making sense. So I was kind of reconfiguring how the book flow was going to work and things like that. But I love the idea of talking about these senses that I feel are so critical to success for any arena. So in the workplace, in families, in communities, I think we lack some of this often in places from politics to C-suite people in leadership sometimes and all sorts of places. So I just wanted to put something like this out with things that I felt passionate about and believe from my experiences really can help build success, whatever that means to an individual. And so I wrote the book with that framework in mind.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And in your experience, Julie, I guess, is there a sense or multiple senses that leaders tend to struggle with the most that you've noticed?
So I think there are some really good leaders who do some of these senses or all of the senses very naturally and very beautifully. I see those bad leaders, the leaders I'm labeling as bad, I guess. I see them struggle with different ones. So often, I think what happens is leaders are elevated because they're really good at a position of some sort. And then they might not be given the tools or the techniques to really do leadership well. And so they just kind of try to make it work. And they feel like they need to know all the answers. And so they approach leadership from that kind of a mindset of, I'm going to have the answers. I'm going to tell people what to do. I'm going to be in charge and that kind of thing. Whereas I think leaders who bring people along and lift their knowledge and help bring their value forth are the ones that I think of as really good leaders. And so when I think of that, I think the areas that I see the biggest struggle with, and honestly, I would say it's not just leaders that are in formal leadership roles. I'd say many in society generally is that listening is a little bit of a lost skill. I think that we don't listen as well as we could. So it's really interesting, my journey with that particular sense. So early in my career, when I started in this research world, I was challenged by one of my CEOs that I was reporting into to learn focus group moderating. And I was at that point somebody who preferred being behind the scenes, not in front of anybody. And so I was like, ooh, panic. So I was put into I went to training and things like that, and focus group moderating and in-depth interviewing, which was kind of a training together, they're very much about listening. And I really was learning some listening skills that I never had really learned about prior to that in my life. And then later with mediation training, again, it's a lot about listening and really doing it effectively and paraphrasing back to people what you're hearing and making sure that you're understanding what is being said. And listening with the idea of understanding that other's perspective, not with the idea of responding to them. Because I think often, and I am just as guilty as many, often we are in a space while we're listening of, this is what I'm going to say back. But that's not true listening. True listening is, I want to fully understand what you're saying and what your perspective is. And that's something I think that's a little bit of a lost art in leadership or elsewhere in many places. It's closely tied to observe, because we can watch for nonverbals and the cues that happen when we see people. And then the other one I would point out is appreciate. I think it is hard to appreciate really well. And I still feel like I'm evolving on this. Often we might think, oh, that's really cool, but we don't take the time to tell the person, here's what I valued and why I valued. And more in depth, we might say, great job, but we don't take the time to say, that presentation was really awesome. I love the detail you put in it. I loved how you talked about what they can do as next steps, or whatever the case is. I'm making it up as I go. But to take the time to give the detail in appreciation, not just the great job kind of thing.
I find that really fascinating. A point that you brought up earlier about how, I guess, one that can be really good in their role over time and suddenly transition into a leadership role as a result, can sometimes have a consequence on leadership within the organization, because the organization maybe didn't invest enough into that individual during the transition or prior to the transition of becoming a leader or being placed in that leadership role. I guess me and I'm sure others listening to this podcast have probably had a similar situation in their career. Me personally, coming from a very quantitative background, being in finance, like I've worked with very excellent people in the quant space within business. And I have seen people transition to those leadership roles, and they suddenly became, you know, almost lost, and they kind of lost the culture of the team. And it took a lot, and it actually turned into sometimes worst case scenario, a toxic atmosphere. So, you know, I'd like to really take home on that point where it's important for organizations to invest in leadership skills. You know, just because someone's really good at their trade doesn't mean that they're necessarily a good leader. They can probably lose a lot of respect with that. Harley?
Yeah,
Were you going to say something? Oh, sorry, Julie. Were you going to say something there? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I totally agree. So please go.
Okay. Harley, did you have something you want to mention?
Well, Julie, I'm resisting myself because I have so many things that come to my mind, but we don't have enough time. That's like, we could go on and on. But one thing that I want to touch on, and the senses are helping me a ton just in my leadership personality. One thing to highlight too that needs some attention is also the feeling side. What I learned when I first started in leadership was, okay, maybe it's not the best thing to be vulnerable with my team or vulnerable with individuals around me. But when I finally opened up to individuals, it just changed the way that I was interacting with them. And it just built like a trust level, because sometimes leaders can just, they want to maybe have the perception that, hey, I'm a leader. I'm great. You know, nothing's wrong with me. Right. But it's being vulnerable is huge. So I appreciate you adding that feeling part in there of, you know, talking about feelings at work. So
thank you. I really agree with what you've said. It is, I think it comes from that being placed into a position that you don't feel 100% confident or ready for, but you want to take advantage of this opportunity. You've had success. You've been given an opportunity, but then you're like, now what do I do? And so you think you have to put on this persona that is, okay, I've got my stuff together. I know what I'm doing, which means you don't share when you aren't certain. And honestly, that sharing of uncertainty or sharing of mistakes or sharing of, I wish I had done that differently. Those are the opportunities that really build trust and really connect people to the leaders. And I think you probably all have seen the kinds of things that they talk about. People stay, employees stay in organizations because they're leader, not because of the organization always as a whole. It's their leader. And so building those connections, being open when you don't know, is a very powerful thing. I agree.
Yeah, well, I can agree.
One thing to add is that retention piece, Julie. I mean, it's for organizations, it's so critical to keep people for a long time, right? Because it's so expensive to get talent. So that retention piece and having great leaders at companies is critical to an organization's success. So
agree.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So Julie, I want to transition to a subject that perhaps most people don't like to think about, or I guess consider that they have them, and that's addressing blind spots. They're fairly common. I can admit that I have some, and I probably have some that I don't even know that I have. So it was a theme that I saw come across in your book several times. I guess first off, could you please help explain what a blind spot is?
In my book, I have created or written about a danger for each of the senses. And as you're mentioning, the blind spots relate to the observed sense. That's the danger I talk about there. And for the others, I have deaf moments. I have numbness under feeling, too sour, and something's rotten. So I have some different topics under each of those. And for all of the senses, we have blind spots. I'll use that as our global term here, because it's true. They are blind spots. They are things we don't realize we aren't doing or not doing that impact things unfavorably, right? Mm-hmm. So for a blind spot under the observe umbrella, failing to realize that our own anxiety and fear and our own distrust of others will limit our ability to observe people and see what's happening with them and read those nonverbal cues. And those nonverbal, it's depending on source, something like 70 to 90% of communication is nonverbal. Without the ability to read those cues, we're limiting our ability to understand others. So, you know, that's one of them. When we don't listen well, in the way I was describing, where we are trying to understand the other's perspective, it actually increases the likelihood for conflict. So as a mediator, I can tell you that we use a concept in mediation called uninterrupted time. So we bring two parties together, and as they come into the room, the framework is, you know, we do some introductory things, and then we allow each party some uninterrupted time to tell their story, what's led them to the table at mediation that during that at that time. And I can tell you there have been many, many times when I've sat listening to the uninterrupted times where one party will be speaking and the other party afterwards will say, I never knew that. Or I'll see nonverbals that tell me that was a surprise because we don't always listen. And that's what can lead to conflict sometimes, leading people to be at a mediation table, right? So those things, those dangers that get in the way of how we can be effective with our teams or with other people beyond our teams, our families and whatnot. One of the elements that's built into my book throughout is self-reflection. I really think it's important for all of us as leaders, aspiring leaders, to be very self-reflective and really looking internally at what we may not be realizing about ourselves and asking people we trust to give us feedback, asking our teams to give us feedback, having accountability partners and things like that.
So it seems like another main theme is listening. A lot of things come down to listening and understanding mm-hmm. perspectives. I actually had a probably one of the best managers that I've ever had. It was at United Health Group. She actually asked me to start writing almost everything down with conversations. And it actually helped me become more engaged in a conversation. And actually, as I was writing it, I started to realize that I was starting to think about the other's perspective. And it helped me ask better questions to, I guess, remediate any conflict. And coming from a finance background, like, I get to deal with a lot of conflict. You know, you're cutting people's budgets or you're reallocating things. It's hard to communicate.
You're one of those guys. Huh?
Yeah. I'm one of those guys. Look out. Coming to an organization near you. and thanks for, I guess, adding some more clarity on blind spots. And I guess from your point of view, does addressing blind spots get easier over time as you, I guess, experience more in your career? Have you maybe come across that?
Well, I think all of us are human and we don't like to admit when we are not doing something ideally, right? Yeah. So I think it's a challenge to do that, to realize that, we haven't been doing something as well as we could. And so I believe people have to be open to that self-reflection piece to be able to consider the possibility that maybe I'm not good at something, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it becomes easier with time. I think our dangers are areas of either blind spots or deaf moments or numbness or sourness or rottenness or whatever those are, you know, different ones in the different senses in my book. I think they shift. So we may tackle one, like maybe we become better listeners, but then we realize that we aren't in the arena of appreciation. We aren't really addressing minor annoyances right away the way we could. And so they build up to big things and we aren't in the appreciation space. Then we're in a, kind of upset, angry kind of space, you know? So I think it's they shift over time and it always takes self-reflection and listening to feedback. You know, one of the hardest things to do is take in the criticism or feedback that we get from say 360 feedback or anything and hear the parts where people are suggesting what we could be better at, but trying to understand that that's important to understand, to hear, to value even, and try to make some changes to address them.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of that has to do with humility as well. Mm-hmm. And humility just seems to be like an uncommon commodity, which makes it very valuable. I've always seemed to work better with people when I find myself to just realize and just say, hey, I don't know exactly how everything works here. Let's try to figure this out together, or let's try to understand each other. Go ahead.
And it gives everybody a chance to shine then too, right?
It's that's true.
Just about the leader shining or whoever we are. It gives everybody a chance to shine and contribute, which is valuable.
Yeah. So I have a couple of closing questions for you that I think would help a lot of our listeners. And my first one is, in your personal and or professional life, what is the most important lesson you've learned? It's kind of broad.
I mean, I've learned so many. I think I reflected on this question a little bit before.
That's why you have to read the book. Go get the
there
book.
There are a lot of lessons in there. Thank you. And thank you also for your kind comments about the book earlier as well.
Of course.
I think the biggest lesson that I'm kind of centered in on right now at this point in time, I bet I would have answered it differently at other points in time. But at this point in time, I think the biggest one I'm honed in on is that to build confidence, whether as a leader or in anything, it takes more than thinking about how to be confident or reading about how to be confident or listening to podcasts about how to be confident. Mind you, all of those are valuable, but it also takes acting. The more we act, the more we try, the more we actually build that confidence. And that's really hard to do when we already feel like uncertain. So trying to overcome that uncertainty with just some kind of action is the tip I would give about trying to, that's something I've been centered on. Like I mentioned with the book, it took me some time to work through that. And to me, I think when I'm working with leaders, I work with a lot that feel not confident. And so I see it with others as well. And I think just taking action of some sort to try and overcome that barrier of not feeling the confidence.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm going to transition to Harley here. He has a question.
Yeah. It's kind of a comment and just, you know, kind of reinforcing what you're saying. I have the opportunity to speak in front of like 300 students later this year. And if you were to ask me maybe 5-10 years ago of like having, like seeing myself up there and doing that, I would be like, no way. There's no way I could do that. But to your point of actually acting and putting yourself in those situations, that's the only way you get better, right?
Absolutely.
The best way to learn is by doing. Of course, asking mentors and people that you look up to in your life helps, but I just find acting and putting yourself in those situations that you may not know, you know, really what to say or what to do, but you're going to make yourself better. So I appreciate that.
I agree. Good luck with that.
We will,
that's awesome.
I will report back to, if there were tears involved, but no, it's to my the universe I went to, one of the classes. So
my next goal for you would be 1,000.
Yeah. Next 1K, then 10K.
Yeah. You know. Exponential.
You on the way up.
And I guess I have my final question for you. If you were to give someone early, or I guess someone that's early on in their career, advice, what would that be?
I think that I would circle back to what we were just talking about acting to build confidence. I use the word when I'm coaching a lot about experimenting. So if you think of the idea of experimenting, scientific experimentation, we kind of know that it means there are going to be a lot of tries before you get the right thing, right? That's what we know about scientific experimentation. So why can't we approach building our careers or whatever we aim for in the same manner? Why can't we have that experimenting mindset where we know we're going to be trying some things, we're going to learn some things, some things are going to downright fail for us, or we're going to find out we don't really like that thing we thought we'd like, and then we make shifts and move a different direction like a scientist would in their experiments. So I think that would be one thing. And I also would like to just say, you know, no matter what your background that you came from, some people have had great supports in their early years and their young adult years, and others have had more challenges. But no matter where you stem from, there is always possibility to grow and to learn and to evolve to the way you want. So just keep trying, keep moving forward. Don't stop. Don't ever stop.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that take. I guess before we conclude everything, Harley, Jeremy, do you guys have any more questions?
Well, no questions, Julie. I just want to say thank you for taking the time with us. And I know, to be honest, I didn't know you before this, but now I will be spreading your word and sharing you with the team that I have and more individuals that I come across, because a lot of what you were sharing was, it hit home for me. So I just want to say, I appreciate the work that you're doing. It's helping a lot of people you should be really proud of what you put together. So thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for those kind words.
Yeah, I actually have one.
Oh, go ahead, please.
One question. I just came across a book I started reading. It's called, gotta pull it up because it's super
Atomic
simple.
Habits?
Nope. Different one. Moved on from that one. That one was a good read, though. It is the 12 rules of life. And one of them was, it said to stop comparing yourself to people. Because it's I guess nothing good is going to come from it. And that's kind of like going through your conversation, it kind of like that pops in my head, because it kind of tells you that, like, yes, you can be great at something, but if you keep comparing yourself to others, that you're never going to appreciate how good you are at the thing you're doing. Is that, like, going through your process, has that ever kind of came across to you of, like, that, I guess, line of thinking?
Yeah, that comparison thing can get in the way of a lot. Thanks, Jeremy. It's very challenging, and I've actually been challenged by it in the past, because I would look outward, especially from the background I had, and I felt like I was less than other people in a lot of ways. And at least the people I was looking at and stuff, you know, and I was like, I can't do it because I feel like I can never get to where they are. And I think that's a very damaging thing to do to ourselves as humans. And yet it's so innate in all of us, I think. So it's really kind of a catch-22. I think it's ideal if we don't do it.
Yep.
I think it's very challenging not to do it.
Yeah.
But we all have a unique path. We all have, in my mind, a unique purpose in life. And the things that you see that you want to aspire to, and the people that you see doing things that you aspire to, even if you tried to follow their exact path, it would turn out differently, because we all are unique. We are not carbon copies of one another. So if we could try not to do that, it's very challenging.
Yeah.
But if we could try not to do it, we open ourselves up to our unique path more easily than if we're trying to follow somebody else's path. I talk about success as identified by each individual. So, like, all of us here in this podcast discussion, we all have a different aim of what success means to us. And that's great. That's what is humanity. And so why would we, when we know we have these different aspirations, even if they're similar, like leadership seems common, we are going to all come at it differently. So why compare ourselves to others? Just follow our own unique path. So it is, I love that you called that out. It sounds like a good book.
Yeah.
And it is very challenging.
Yeah. And then I would just say the last thing, I got this advice in my first ever internship. And at the end of the internship, they had to do like a grading system. And he's like, if I could give you a grade, I would give you an A. But he goes, looking at this form, I would have to just say that you did nothing wrong. And he goes, that's not going to be good to tell you that, because then you're just going to think that you don't have to go and change anything. And he said, the best advice I can tell you right now is you're going to hate getting feedback, but it's going to be the best thing for you. And that was probably like the best advice I ever got. Cause it's like every time I get told I did something wrong, I'm like, God, this sucks. But like a day or like an hour later, I'm like, I'm actually kind of glad that happened, because if it didn't, I probably would have just continued doing the same thing over and over again, thinking I'm not doing it wrong. And I'm just glad I got that advice, because there are still times that after I'm like, oh, God, that really sucked that I had to go through that. But then later on, I'm like, I'm really glad that that person pulled me aside and gave me that, I guess, feedback.
Yeah, I think that was a really big gift that that person gave you. That's a wonderful story. And to get it so early in your career is fantastic.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is all the questions I have. Thank you, though.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I guess we can wrap it up here quick, Julie. I guess I'd like to echo what Harley said earlier. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're very busy. So thanks for making the time and taking it out of your career and family life to meet with us. And before we wrap things up, I wanted to quick ask you where someone can find your book.
Mm-hmm. So you can find it via either of my websites, peerperformancesolutions.com. or juliegeskepeer.com. So either of those, also through LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So all those kinds of things, but really just go to the websites. There are links on there and you can get it via different avenues. So, and right. I want to say thank you to you all for having me on the podcast. I truly appreciate it. It was fun to have this conversation with you all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very fun. Yeah. Thank you again. I guess have a nice rest of your night, Julie.
All right.
Thanks, Julie.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, please consult a professional.